Chapter 31. It took a moment for them to untangle their arms and legs. Alec was cursing and grunting, and at one point, Mark started to slip off the edge, and the old man pulled him back up, only to resume his cursing. Finally, they were standing, straightening their clothes. And then a huge boom sounded throughout the chamber as the mechanism above them slammed shut. Complete darkness enveloped them.
"Great," Mark heard Alec say. "Can't see a thing."
"Pull out the work pad," Mark replied. "I know the battery's almost dead, but we don't have much choice."
After a grumble of agreement and a scuffling sound, the room lit up with the glow of the work pad's surface. For a second, Mark was back in the tunnels of the subtrans, running with Trina by the glow of his phone. The memories began to flood in, to drown him fully in the horror of that day, but he pushed them away. He had a feeling that the next day or two might do enough to provide him with fresh ones anyway. Sighing, he wondered if he'd ever have a good night's sleep again.
"I saw a berg dropping in at the last second before I swung down," Mark said, bringing his mind fully to the present and the task at hand. "So we know they had at least two before we crashed one of them."
Alec was shining the face of the work pad in different directions, scoping out the area.
"Yeah, I could hear those thrusters. I'm guessing that the landing pad sinks down here and the berg rolls off, then it goes back and up and rotates again. We better hurry before we have company we don't want."
Alec stopped moving the work pad, holding it up to illuminate the entrances to two chambers on opposite sides of the one in which they stood. Grooves in the floor showed where the bergs were pulled off the landing pad once it sank down. Both cavernous spaces were dark and empty. The walkway that encircled the abyss in the center chamber was about 4 feet wide, and as they inched along, it creaked and groaned. The structure held, though Mark's heart didn't slow until he'd crossed it completely. Breathing a sigh of relief, Mark walked up to a round door with a wheel handle in the middle, like something in a submarine.
"This place was built a long time ago,"
Alec said as he handed the work pad over to Mark.
"Probably to protect government executives in case of a world catastrophe. Too bad no one had enough time to make it here. I'm sure most of them fried like the rest."
"Nice," Mark said, holding the work pad up so he could examine the door. "You think it's locked?"
Alec had already stepped forward and grabbed the wheel tightly with both hands, preparing as though it wouldn't budge. But when he gave it a try, it spun a half circle easily, sending him lurching to the side and crashing into Mark. The two of them stumbled and fell onto the walkway, Mark on top.
"Kid," Alec said, "I've been closer to you more today than I'd hoped to be in a lifetime. Now, make sure you don't fall off the edge. I need your help around here."
Mark laughed as he got to his feet, pushing off on Alec's gut a little more than he really needed to.
"It's a crying shame you never had kids, old man. Just think what a good grandpa you could have been."
"Oh, yeah," the former soldier replied through a grunt as he stood up. "That would have been a lot of fun, imagining them all burning to death when the flares struck."
That killed the mood instantly. Mark felt his own face fall as the words made him think of his parents and Madison. Though he'd never know for sure what had happened to them, his mind was super talented at imagining the absolute worst. Alec must have noticed.
"Oh, hell, I'm sorry."
He reached out and squeezed Mark's shoulder.
"Boy, I'm telling you right here and now, with all the sincerity an old buzzard like me can muster, that I'm sorry for what I just said. I don't envy the losses you felt that day. Not one iota. Work was my family, and it wasn't the same. I know it."
Mark had never heard the man say anything like what had just come out of his mouth.
"It's okay, really. Thanks."
He paused, then added,
"Grandpa."
Alec nodded, then moved back to the wheel, spun it until there was a loud click. He swung the door open, and it clanged as it struck the wall. The other side revealed nothing but darkness, though a rumbling hum like the sound of distant machinery grew louder.
What is that? Mark whispered. It almost sounds like there's a factory or something down here.
He aimed the work pad's glow through the open doorway, revealing a long hallway that disappeared into darkness.
Generator, I'm sure, Alec responded.
I guess they couldn't live down here without at least a little electricity. How else would this thing work?
He held the device out in front of him.
Exactly. We've been living in the wild or in the settlements so long, it brings back memories.
Bergs? Generators? You think they have a ton of fuel stored here, or are they bringing it in from somewhere else?
Alec thought a second.
Well, it's been a year, and it takes a heap to keep those bergs afloat. My guess is they're bringing it in.
We keep going? Mark asked, though the answer was obvious.
Yep.
Mark stepped into the hallway first and waited for Alec to join him.
What do we do when someone sees us?
He was whispering, but his voice sounded loud in the confined quarters.
We could use a weapon or two about now.
Tell me about it. Look, we don't have much choice here, and we don't have a whole lot to lose. Let's just keep moving and take it as it comes.
They started off down the hallway when something clanged behind them, followed by squeals and grinding gears. Mark didn't have to look to know that the landing pad, presumably with a berg perched on top, had begun to sink into the ground. Alec acted much calmer than Mark felt. He had to lean in to be heard over the racket.
Let's wait to see which chamber it goes into, and then we'll hide in the other. We better not get caught in this hallway.
Okay, Mark said, his heart thumping, his nerves on edge. He turned off the work pad. They didn't need it with the light spilling in from outside. They went back through the door and pulled it shut, then crouched in the shadows of the walkway as the huge berg descended. Luckily, the cockpit was on the other side, so there was little chance of them being seen. Once it had sunk all the way down, there were more clangs and squeals, and the ship started moving on tracks into the chamber to the right. Alec and Mark ran to the opposite chamber and hid in the very back, disappearing into the gloom. The wait was agonizing, but eventually the berg found its home. When it stopped moving, the giant landing pad began to move upward again, slowly but surely. Whoever had flown the ship had already disembarked, because Mark could faintly hear voices over the noises, then the sound of the round door being opened.
Come on, Alec whispered into his ear. Let's follow them.
They slipped out of the chamber and slinked along the walkway. The berg passengers had left the door of the exit ajar, and Alec crouched next to it, leaning in to listen. He took a peek. Seemingly satisfied that they were in the clear, he gave Mark a stiff nod and slipped into the hallway once again. Mark followed just as the landing pad above him started to rotate, the bushes and earth and small trees heading back toward the sky. Voices echoed down the passage ahead of them, but they were too distorted to understand. Alec took the work pad from Mark and slipped it inside his backpack. Then he grabbed Mark's arm and started pulling him forward, walking close to the wall, his eyes narrowed. Soon everything would be plunged back into darkness. They crept down the hallway, step by careful step. Whoever had shown up had decided to stop and talk, because their voices became clearer as Mark and Alec continued their pursuit. It sounded like there were only two of them. Alec finally stopped as well, and suddenly Mark could hear every word.
Just north of here, a woman was saying. Burned out like a brick oven. I bet it's got something to do with those people they caught last night. We'll know soon enough.
A man responded.
We better. Like things weren't bad enough without losing our other berg. Those jacks in Alaska couldn't care less about us. Now that everything's gone weird, I bet we don't even hear from them again.
No doubt, the woman said. Can you say expendable?
Yeah, but that wasn't supposed to be us. It's not our fault the virus is mutating.
The landing pad clanged behind them, presumably done with its rotation. All was dark. The new arrivals started walking away, their footsteps heavy, as if they wore boots. One of them clicked on a flashlight, the glow from its beam bobbing up ahead. Alec grabbed Mark again, and they followed, keeping a safe distance. The two strangers didn't speak again until they reached a door. Mark heard the squeak of the hinges as it opened. Then the man said something as they stepped into a room Mark couldn't see.
"They've already got a name for it, by the way. They're calling it the Flare."
The door slammed shut. Chapter 32. They hadn't heard much from the pair, but Mark didn't like the sound of it.
"The Flare. He said they've started calling it the Flare. The virus."
"Yeah."
Alec lit up the work pad again. The glow revealed his face. The face of a man who looked as if he'd never smiled in his life. All sags and creases.
"That can't be good. If something has a nickname, that means it's big and being talked about. Not good at all."
"We need to find out what happened. Those people dancing around the fire got attacked way before us. At least their settlement did. Maybe they were some kind of test subjects."
"Then we've got two objectives, kid. One, find Lana, Trina, and that cute little whippersnapper. Two, figure out what's going on around here."
Mark couldn't have agreed more. "So let's get moving." Alec turned off the work pad, casting the hallway into darkness.
"Just run your hand along the wall," he whispered. "Try not to step on me."
They started making their way down the passage. Mark kept his footsteps light and his breathing shallow, trying to stay silent. The humming of distant machinery had grown louder, and the wall vibrated as his fingers traced an invisible line along its cool surface. They reached a spot where the slightest outline of rectangular light marked the door through which the two strangers from the Berg had gone. Alec hesitated right before it, then hurried past on his tiptoes, the least soldierly thing Mark had ever seen him do. Mark decided to be a little braver. He stopped in front of it and leaned in, pressing his ear against the door.
"Not smart," Alec called out in a harsh whisper.
Mark didn't respond, concentrating on what he could hear. Muffled words, impossible to make out. But the discussion sounded a little heated.
"Just come on," Alec said. "I want to explore before someone locks us in a brig and throws away the key."
Mark nodded, though he doubted the man could see him very well. He moved away from the door and resumed his position next to the opposite wall, hand pressed against it. They kept walking, soon in darkness again, as they left the faint light bleeding around the edges of the door. The hallway stretched on, the world silent except for the rumble of the machinery. Mark couldn't tell when it happened exactly, but he realized he could see again. There was a hazy red glow to the air, enough that Alec looked like a creeping devil in front of him. Mark held his hand up and wiggled his fingers. They looked like they were covered in blood. Assuming Alec had noticed too, he didn't say anything, and they continued. They finally came upon a large door in the left wall that was slightly ajar. A red bulb covered by a wired cage hung above it. Alec stopped and stared ahead, as if waiting for someone to explain what waited inside. The noises of humming and cranking machinery had escalated and now filled the air to the point that Mark couldn't whisper and be heard.
"Guess that answers the question on generators," he said.
His head was really starting to ache right behind his eyes, and it hit him how exhausted he was. They'd been up through the night and half into another day.
"Maybe that's where they are. Just open the stupid thing."
Alec glanced back at him.
"Patience, boy. Caution. A hasty soldier is a dead soldier."
"A slow soldier means Trina and them could be dead."
Instead of responding, Alec reached out and opened the door, swinging it into the hallway. The sounds of machinery went up a notch, and a wave of heat poured from the space within, along with the stench of burning fuel.
"Oh, man," Alec said. "I forgot how bad that smells."
He carefully closed the door.
Let's hope we find something more useful soon.
They came upon the next door about 20 yards farther along, and there were 3 more past it. Then finally, one facing them where the hall ended. Each one of these doors also stood ajar about 3 inches, lit by a bulb encased in a cage just like the generator room. Except these lights were yellow and barely working.
"There's something really creepy about the doors being open," Mark whispered. "And it's so dark inside the rooms."
"What's your point?" Alec asked. "Ready to turn around and go home?"
"No, just saying that you should go in first."
Alec chuckled. He stuck his foot out and nudged open the first door, which swung inward. It let out a metallic creak as dim yellow light spilled across the floor within, though it wasn't enough to reveal anything else. The door came to a stop with a soft thud. Then there was only silence. Alec made a harrumphing noise and walked on to the next room instead of going into the first one. He lightly kicked that door open as well, with a similar result. Mostly darkness, no sign of people, no sounds. He went to the next door and kicked it open, then to the last one at the end of the hallway. Nothing.
"Guess we better go in," he said.
He turned back to Mark and jerked his head, a clear order to follow him into the last room. Mark quickly stepped up close to him, ready to do as he was told. Alec reached around the edge of the frame and searched for a light switch, but came up empty. Then went inside, Mark right behind him. They stood there for a moment, waiting for their eyes to adjust, searching the darkness. Alec finally sighed and pulled out the work pad again.
"What's the point of generators if none of the lights are on? This thing won't work much longer."
He powered it up. The light from the device cast a spooky blue glow across the large room, bigger than Mark would have guessed, revealing 2 long rows of bunks lining both walls, probably 10 on each side. They were all empty except for one, almost at the end, where a slouched figure sat with its back to them. It looked to be the slumped shoulders of an older man. A chill raced through Mark at the sight of him. In the dim light, the mostly empty room, the pressing silence, he felt as if he were staring at the back of a ghost waiting to pronounce their doomed destiny. The person didn't move, didn't make a sound.
"Hello?"
Alec called out, his voice a boom in the silence. Mark snapped his head to look at him, shocked.
"What are you doing?"
Alec's face was hidden in shadow since the work pad was pointed down the room.
"Being nice," he whispered. "I'm going to ask this fellow some questions."
Then louder.
"Hello down there? Mind helping us out a bit?"
A low, raspy mumble, what Mark thought a man on his deathbed might sound like, answered. The words were a jumble of lost syllables.
"What's that?"
Alec asked. The man didn't move, didn't reply. He sat on his cot, facing away from them, a lump of a human body. Head down, shoulders slumped. Mark suddenly had to know, had to, what the guy had said. He started walking down the aisle between the cots, ignoring the short burst of protest from Alec. As he made his way toward the man, the spaces between the cots flashing by, he heard Alec hurrying to catch up to him, the light from the work pad bobbing about and making weird shadows dance on the walls. Mark slowed as he neared the slumped man, felt an icy tingle across his skin. The stranger was broad-shouldered and thick-chested, but his demeanor made him look frail and pathetic. Mark steered clear a few feet as he reached the man's side, saw a face covered in shadow and hanging low.
"What did you say?"
Mark asked when he was in front of the man. Alec reached his side and held the work pad up to cast light on the visibly depressed stranger. The man sat forward with elbows on knees, hands clenched together, his entire visage appearing as if it might melt and drip onto the floor. The man slowly raised his eyes and looked at them, his head tilting on his neck like rusty machinery. His face was grave and long and wrinkled more than it should have been. His eyes were dark caverns that the light seemed unable to penetrate.
"I didn't want to give her away,"
he said with a raspy edge.
"Oh, dear God, I didn't want to. Not to those savages."
Chapter 33. Mark had so many questions, he couldn't get them out fast enough.
"What do you mean?" he asked. "Who was given away? What can you tell us about this place? What about a virus? Do you know anything about two women and a little girl, maybe captured outside?"
He paused to swallow the golf ball-sized lump in his throat and slowed down.
"My friend's name is Trina. Blonde hair, my age. There was another woman and a girl. Do you know anything about them?"
The man lowered his gaze to the floor again and heaved a sigh.
"So many questions."
Mark was so frustrated that he had to compose himself for a second. He took a deep breath and walked over to sit down on the cot facing the raspy-voiced stranger. Maybe the old man was dotty. Bombarding him with questions probably wasn't the smartest approach. Mark looked up to see that Alec was a little astonished at his outburst, but then he shook his head and came over to join Mark on the cot. Alec placed the work pad on the floor so that its glow shone up and gave everyone that slightly monstrous look you get when you place a flashlight under your chin.
"What can you tell us?"
Alec asked in one of his gentler tones. He'd obviously reached the same conclusion as Mark. This guy was on edge and needed to be handled with care.
"What's happened here? All the lights are out, no one's around. Where is everybody?"
The man merely groaned in response, then covered his face with both hands. Alec and Mark exchanged a look.
"Let me try again," Mark said.
He leaned forward, inching to the edge of the cot and putting his forearms on his knees.
"Hey, man, what's your name?"
The stranger dropped his hands, and even in the dim light, Mark could see that his eyes were moist with tears.
"My name? You want to know my name?"
"Yeah, I want to know your name.
Our lives are just as crappy as yours, I promise. I'm Mark, and this is my friend Alec. You can trust us." The man made a scoffing sound, then had a short bout of racking coughs. Finally, he said,
"The name's Anton. Not that it matters."
Mark was afraid to continue. This man could hold so many answers to so many questions, and he didn't want to screw it up.
"Listen, we came from one of the settlements. Three of our friends were taken in the canyon above this place, and our village was attacked by someone from here, we think. We just want to understand what's going on and get our friends back. That's it."
He sensed Alec about to say something and shot him a glare to shut up.
"Is there anything you can tell us? Like, what is this place? What's happening out there with the Bergs and the darts and the virus? What happened here? Anything you got?"
A heavy weariness was starting to weigh on him, but he forced himself to focus on the man across from him, hoping for answers. Anton took a few low, deep breaths, and a tear trickled out of his right eye.
"We chose a settlement 2 months ago," he finally said, "as a test. Not that the disastrous results changed the overall plan in the end, but the girl changed it for me. So many dead, and it was the one who lived who made me realize what a horrible thing we'd done. Like I said, I didn't want them to give her back to her people today. That's when I was truly done. Officially done."
Dee Dee, Mark realized. It had to be Dee Dee. "But what about Trina and Lana?
Tell us what happened," he urged.
He felt guiltier with every passing second that they weren't actively searching for their friends, but they needed information or they might never find them.
"From the beginning."
Anton began to speak in a somewhat distant tone.
The Post-Flares Coalition in Alaska wanted something that spread fast, killed fast. A virus that some monsters had developed back in the good old days before the sun flares burned it all out. They say it shuts down the mind. Instant comas, they said, rendering the bodies useless but causing massive hemorrhaging that would spread it to those nearby. Transmission is by blood, but it's also airborne when the conditions are right. A good way to kill off the settlements that are forced to live in close quarters.
The man's words spilled out of him without a hitch or a change in volume. Mark's mind was growing numb from exhaustion, and he found it hard to follow the details. He knew that what he was hearing was important, but it still wasn't fitting together. How long had he been awake now? 24 hours? 36? 48?
Before they realized they'd screwed up big time.
Mark shook his head again. He'd just missed part of what Anton had been saying.
What do you mean? Alec asked. How'd they screw up?
Anton coughed, then sniffled, and wiped a hand across his nose.
The virus. It's all wrong. It didn't work right on the test subjects over the last 2 months, but they went ahead with the plan anyway, saying what's left of the planet's resources is being depleted. All they did was up the dosage in those darts. Those bastards are trying to wipe out half the population. Half.
What about the little girl? Mark almost shouted. Did she have two women with her? Anton didn't seem to be hearing a word that Mark or Alex said.
They said we'd be taken care of once the deed was done. That they'd bring us all back to Alaska and give us homes and food and protection. Let half the world die and we'd start over. But they screwed up, didn't they? That little girl lived even though she was struck with a dart. But it's more than that. The virus isn't what they thought. It spreads like wildfire, all right. Too bad it's got a mind of its own. Pardon the pun.
He let out something that was vaguely like a chuckle, but it soon transformed into a hacking cough. Suddenly, he was sobbing freely. The man finally slumped over onto his side and pulled his legs up onto the cot, curling into the fetal position, his shoulders shaking as he cried.
"I've got it," he said through the sobs. "I'm sure of it. We've all got it. You've got it, too. Have no doubts, my friends. You've got the virus. I told my co-workers I didn't want anything to do with them. Not anymore. They left me up here by myself. Suits me just fine."
Mark felt like he was observing the whole scene through a fog. He couldn't concentrate. He tried to snap out of it. "Do you have any idea where our friends could be?" he asked, more calmly this time. "Where are your co-workers?"
"They're all down below," Anton whispered. "I couldn't bear it anymore. I came up here to die or go crazy. Both, I guess. I'm just glad they let me."
"Down below?" Alec repeated.
"Farther down in the bunker,"
Anton answered, his voice getting quieter as his crying subsided.
"They're down there, planning to revolt in Asheville. Let them know we're not happy how things ended up. They want to take it all the way to Alaska."
Mark looked at Alec, who was just staring at Anton. It seemed like everything the poor stranger said was a little more bizarre than the statement before it.
"Revolt?" Mark asked. "Why Asheville? And who are these people?"
"Asheville is the last safe haven in the East,"
the man replied, his words barely perceptible now, nothing but dry, faint rasps.
Walls and everything, ramshackle as they may be. And they are my co-workers, all hired by the PFC, the almighty Post-Flares Coalition. My esteemed associates want to bring their bosses down before they pull out, before they head back to Alaska through the Flat Trans.
Anton, Alex said, listen to me. Is there anyone else we can talk to? And how can we find out about the friends we're looking for? The girl, two women.
The man coughed. Then a little more life sprang into his voice.
Those people I work with have started to lose their minds. Do you understand? They're not right. They'll be down there for hours, planning and scheming. They're going to Asheville, and they'll gather an army along the way if they have to. Oh, there's talk of an antidote there, but that's a bunch of hooey. In the end, my people will make sure that others don't get what's been taken from them. Life. And you know what they'll do after that. You know, don't you?
What?
Mark and Alex said at the same time. Anton got up onto one elbow. The angle of light from the work pad caused one half of his face to be in shadow from the cot, the other in that pale blue glow. The eye on the lighted side looked as if a spark had been lit inside the pupil.
They'll go to Alaska through that Flat Trans in Asheville, the man said. They'll go to where the governments have gathered and make sure the world ends, even though that's not their intent. They'll carry on about finding an antidote and taking down the makeshift government. But all they'll really do is spread the virus once and for all. Make sure they finish what the Sunflare started. Fools. Every last one of them.
Anton collapsed back into a heap on the cot. And a few seconds later, the sounds of his snores filled the room. Chapter 34. Mark and Alex sat in silence for a long time, listening to the wheezes and hitched breathing of Anton as he slept.
I'm not sure we can trust much of what came out of this guy's mouth, Alex said after a while. But I'm troubled, to say the least.
Yeah, Mark responded flatly. His head was pounding and he felt sick to his stomach. He couldn't remember the last time he'd felt so tired. But they had to get up, get out of that room, find Trina and the others. He didn't move.
Boy, you look like a zombie, Alex said after twisting to face him. And I feel like one.
Yeah, Mark said again.
You're not going to like what I'm about to say, but there'll be no argument.
Mark raised his eyebrows. Even that seemed to take all the energy he had.
And what's that?
We need to sleep.
But Trina, Lana.
He suddenly couldn't remember the little girl's name. Impossible. His head ached like a storm had erupted inside his skull.
Alex stood up.
We're not going to do our friends a bit of good if we can't function because we're too tired. We'll just catch a few winks. Maybe an hour each while the other keeps an eye out. Anton said his co-workers would be in some meeting for hours.
He got up from the bed and walked quickly over to the door to the room, closed it, locked it, just to be safe. Mark slumped to his side, then slowly drew his legs up onto the cot. He folded his arms under his head. He wanted to protest, but nothing came out. Alex started talking again.
I'll take first watch, so...
But Mark fell asleep before he heard any more. The dreams came. The memories. More vivid than ever before. As if the depth of his exhaustion had created the perfect canvas for them. Chapter 35. There's that short moment that seems to last a lifetime when Mark sees the wall of water rushing down the steps of the subtrans station, like a stampede of white, frothy horses. He wonders a thousand things. How he got there. What's happened above them in the city. Is his family dead? What does the future hold? What's it like to drown? All these thoughts storm through his mind in the 1 second it takes for the water to reach the bottom of the steps. Then someone is grabbing his arm, pulling him in the opposite direction, forcing his head to turn away from the oncoming disaster. He sees Trina, yanking on him as pure terror brightens her eyes in a sick way that snaps him into motion. He breaks into an all-out run, this time grabbing her arm, making sure they stay together. Alec and Lana are right ahead of them, moving quickly, passing the thugs who accosted them. A thing that now seems so silly and outrageous, it angers Mark all over again. The moment passes. He keeps running down the tunnel, Trina by his side. He shoots a quick glance backward, sees Baxter, Darnell, the Toad, Misty, all keeping up, their eyes painted with the same fear as Trina's, the same fear that Mark feels himself. There's a great rushing sound in the air that takes Mark back to his family's visit to Niagara Falls. People are screaming, and things are breaking, glass shattering. Alec looks nothing like an old man as he sprints past the far edge of the station landing and slips back into the darkness of the train-sized tunnel. They can't have much time, and Mark realizes with a jolt of horror that he's entrusted his entire life to the two people in front of him. That this is it. That he'll be alive or dead within minutes. Someone cries out behind him. Then he's hit hard in the shoulder, and he stumbles. He rights himself, letting go of Trina, who can't stop her momentum and keeps rushing forward. Mark looks back and sees two things. Misty has fallen to the ground, and a surging pool of water is funneling down the tracks of the subtrans from the station. The deluge of water from the streets above is washing over the landing and spilling into the wide groove of the tunnel, and it's just a few dozen feet away. When it washes over Misty's body, the flood is already inches deep. She pushes against the ground to get up. Mark is leaning forward to help when Misty suddenly screams and leaps to her feet, as if the water carries an electric charge.
"It's hot!"
she yells as she reaches out and squeezes Mark's hand. They turn and begin running again, water now sloshing across their feet. It soaks through Mark's shoes and socks, the bottom of his pants, and he feels its warmth, then its full heat. He jumps like someone who has stepped into a bath with the temperature drawn too high. It's unnerving and hot enough to burn his skin. The group continues to run down the tunnel, doing their best to slog through the rising river. It's suddenly 2 feet high, and Mark can't believe how quickly it's happened. It moves up past his knees, and it's coming faster now. He has to plant his feet more firmly to prevent them from being swept out from under him. He catches up with Trina, the others only a few feet ahead. They're not running anymore. They're struggling, using their whole bodies to push forward step by careful step. The water is almost to Mark's upper thighs, and he knows the current is about to win the battle against all of them. And it burns, scalding his skin. He itches from the pain of it.
"Right here!"
Alec screams. Straining against the dirty, raging river, fighting the current, he sloshed his way over to the left. There's a short set of steps there, an iron railing on both sides. It leads up to a landing and a door.
"We need to get up there!"
Mark is moving in that direction, planting his feet one at a time, reestablishing his position with every step. Trina is doing the same. Lana is already there. Baxter, Misty, Darnell, and the Toad are all behind Mark, making their way as well. They can't last much longer in the current. The roar of the water is deafening, broken only by Alec's words and the screams from back in the station echoing down the walls of the tunnel. Those noises have decreased dramatically, and Mark knows why. Most of the people are dead. As if the thought must be made real, a body bumps into Mark's knee, then whips past in the river. A woman. Her face is the blue of death, framed by a floating mat of hair. She spins slowly as she rushes deeper into the black tunnel beyond. Then there are more. Some alive, most unmoving, probably dead, Mark realizes. The living are flailing their arms and legs, trying to swim or gain purchase on the ground. Mark has the fleeting thought that they should try to help them, reach for their hands. But it's too late. They'll be lucky to get themselves out. Alec has reached the stairs, has grabbed the iron railing, takes two steps up. Mark moves another sluggish step forward. The water is up to his waist now, burning, roasting. Alec leans down and helps Lana up the stairs. Then Trina makes it, grabs his hand. Up she goes. Mark is next. He takes the last tremulous step, and he's suddenly clasping forearms with the old man who keeps saving his life. His body jolts forward as Alec pulls him hard, and he's on the stairs, almost falling forward onto his face. Trina catches him, hugs him. The toad makes it, then Darnell, then Misty. All of them but Alec up the short flight of stairs and onto the landing, grouping together in front of the door. The younger boy, Baxter, is struggling. Mark's suddenly struck by shame as he realizes the kid's still out there. He's 6 feet beyond Alec's reach, the water slamming into his side, rising and rising, splashing up into his frightened face. Mark runs back down the stairs, even as Trina is calling his name. He stands next to Alec, wonders what to do. Bodies are shooting past Baxter. Mark sees a stray foot smack the kid in the shoulder. A head bobs up out of the river right next to him, spewing water, then disappears back under.
"Take a step!"
Alec screams at Baxter. The boy responds, does as he's told, then takes another. He's almost within reach now, but the water is beating at his back, making it seem impossible that he hasn't been swept away yet. Mark yells encouragement this time.
"Just a couple more!"
Baxter moves forward and is suddenly off his feet, face down. Alec jumps out at him, grabs the boy's arm just as the current latches onto both of them, ready to yank them away into the darkness. Mark sees it all happen so fast, reacts before he has time to think. He grips the iron railing with his left hand and lunges forward with his right, grasping the sleeve of Alec's shirt before he's swept out of reach. The man's hand comes up and grips Mark's arm just as the material starts to rip. Mark's body is jerked into the current, but he holds onto the railing. His body is pulled out and then to the side, slamming into the concrete wall next to the track. Alec and Baxter follow, their bodies linked. Mark feels as if his arm is about to be ripped from its socket, his muscles straining, screaming. He can only focus on not letting go to ignore the pain. Water rushes into his mouth and he spits it out. It tastes like dirt and oil and burns his tongue. He feels hands grabbing his arm, gripping his shirt and elbow, pulling. From the other side, he can tell that Alec is climbing him like a rope, using both hands, which means Baxter must be gone. Mark can do nothing, his strength spent, every part of his body aching and burning. He can only hold tight, keep the link intact. His head slips under the water and he closes his eyes, forces himself to resist the urge to suck in a breath that would kill him. He loses all sense of movement. There is only water and heat and the rush of sound, and the pain bursting through his body. Then he breaks the surface, feels hands on his chest, under his arm. He's being dragged backward up the stairs. Alec is right in front of him, having caught hold of the railing. Baxter is clasped tightly between the man's legs, like the winning grip of a wrestling match. Even as Mark looks, Baxter's face comes up and out of the river, and the boy is breathing, spitting, screaming. They made it. They all made it. Soon they are on their feet on the landing. All of them. The water has risen to the upper edge of the track's groove and is beginning to spill onto the landing itself. Alec is a man whose every inch speaks of exhaustion, soaking wet, breathing deeply and raggedly. He lurches forward to the door, opens it. Mark has the thought that it could have been locked. Their story could have been over and done right then and there. But it's open, and Alec swings it wide. He motions for everyone to go through.
"Get ready to climb,"
the old man says. Chapter 36. Mark woke up shivering in complete darkness. His body was stiff. He shifted on the cot and it creaked as he tried to get comfortable, find a position in which his muscles didn't ache. He heard Alec and Anton both snoring loudly. Alec obviously hadn't lasted long at first watch. Mark finally settled on his back. Sleep had officially washed away, and there was nothing to do but wait until his friend woke up. He'd let the man get as much rest as possible. They were probably going to need it. The dream had seemed so vivid, so lifelike. His heart was still beating from the rush of the experience, like he'd just relived it for real. He could taste the foul water, feel the burns on his skin. He remembered the exhausting climb up the endless flight of stairs afterward, the winding, the dizzying back and forth. Sapped of strength and hurting from the water burn, he didn't know how he'd kept up with the others. But up and up they'd gone as the water rose below them. He'd never forget the feeling of looking over the railing, down at the roiling, dirty liquid, as it slowly ascended, thinking that his life had almost ended in its depths. Alec had saved them that day. They'd spent the next 2 weeks in that skyscraper, realizing quickly that they couldn't search for loved ones yet. The heat and radiation and rising waters were too much. That was when Mark's hopes of ever finding his family had truly begun to fade. The Lincoln Building, a place that held plenty of its own nightmares. They'd stayed as close to the center of the building as possible, in the structure's middle corridors, to protect themselves from the sun's ruthless radiation. Even so, they'd all been a little sick those first few months. He heard a groan from the direction of Alec's cot, and the thoughts floated away, pushed to the back of his mind to torment him later. But that feeling of terror he'd experienced in those last moments in the subtrans tunnel wouldn't leave, lingering like the smoke from an extinguished fire.
"Oh, crap," Alec said.
Mark popped up onto his elbow, looking in the direction of his friend.
"What?"
"I didn't mean to fall asleep. Fine soldier I am. And I left the damn work pad on. We can forget using that thing again."
The battery was probably almost dead anyway," Mark said. Though in truth, he'd have given anything for 5 more minutes of the device's glow right then.
Alec groaned, and Mark heard the sounds of the cot creaking as the older man got to his feet.
"We need to go find this guy's co-workers. He said they were meeting farther down in the bunker, so we need to find our way to some stairs," the man said.
"What do we do about him?"
Mark pointed to Anton, forgetting for a second that Alec couldn't see him in the darkness.
"Let him sleep out his sorrows. Come on."
Mark took a moment to get his bearings, then got up and felt his way to the end of the cot toward the middle aisle of the room.
"How long do you think we slept?" he asked.
"No idea," Alec answered. "Maybe 2 hours?"
They spent the next few minutes slowly making their way through the room and out into the hallway. The light above the door still sputtered a bit, but barely enough to see by. They eventually found the stairwell Alec had been hoping for. Even the dim sight of it, mostly lines and edges of shadow descending into blackness, brought back to Mark the memory of the flood and their mad clamber up the stairs of the skyscraper. It had been so close that day. If he'd known all that would come after, would he still have fought so hard to survive? Yes, he told himself. Yes, he would have. And he was going to find Trina and get out of hot water again. He almost laughed at his own joke.
Let's get on with it,
Alec whispered as he started down the steps. Mark followed him, determined to stop dwelling on the past. He had to focus on the future, or he'd never reach it. The flight of stairs only descended 3 levels, though there was no exit until they reached the final one. They pushed through the door and found themselves in another hallway. They'd finally come upon the section of the bunker that used the raving generators above. A line of lights along the ceiling illuminated the passage. Unlike the hallway they'd come from, this one curved. Mark shot a glance at Alec and they started down the hall. There were doors lining the walls, but Alec suggested that they explore the length of the corridor before they tried each one. They slipped along as quietly as possible, and it wasn't long before it became clear that the hallway was a giant crescent. They'd traversed about half of what they could see of its length when Mark heard voices, then saw their source. Up ahead on the left, there was a set of double doors, one propped all the way open. The sounds were coming from whatever was happening in that room. A gathering of some sort, men and women talking over each other so that Mark couldn't make out a single word being said. Anton's meeting. His co-workers. Alec slowed as he approached the room and carefully stepped forward until he was right next to it. His back pressed against the closed door. He turned to look at Mark, shrugged as if to say, "It's now or never," then craned his neck toward the opening and leaned in for a peek. Mark held his breath, remembering all too well that they had no weapons. Alec pulled his head back and sidled a couple of feet toward Mark.
It's an auditorium. It's pretty big, seats about 200 maybe. They're all down at the bottom watching some guy on the stage.
How many are there? Mark whispered.
At least 40, maybe 50. No sign of our friends as far as I can tell. They all seem to be arguing about something, but I can't tell what they're saying.
So what do we do? Mark asked. Keep going? This hall can't go on much longer.
If we get down on our hands and knees, we can crawl in there and down the back. We can hide in a corner over on the right. I think we need to hear what these people are saying.
Mark agreed. They didn't know who these people were or what they were up to, but it seemed like the only way to find out. The safest way, at least.
Okay, let's do it.
They crouched on all fours and got ready. Mark right behind Alec. The soldier leaned forward to take a look around the edge of the door. Then he started crawling into the large room. Mark followed, feeling almost naked as they entered the open air of the auditorium. But no one was close to the back. The voices were all coming from below and sounded far enough away. And judging from the fact that they all seemed to be talking at once, Mark had a feeling they weren't on the alert for intruders. Alec crawled along the last row, his side pressed against the black plastic of the chairs, until he got all the way to the far right side of the room, where the corner was shadowed in darkness. He stopped and situated himself, his legs crossed, his body wedged into the space between the last chair and the wall. Mark moved to sit next to him. He had to tuck himself in closer than was comfortable in order to stay as hidden as possible. Alec stretched up and peeked over the chair in front of them, then sank down again quickly.
Can't see much. Seems like they're waiting for something to begin. Or maybe they're taking a break. I don't know.
Mark closed his eyes and leaned his head against the wall. They sat there for what seemed like forever. At least 10 excruciating minutes passed, with nothing changing. Just the buzz of mixed conversation. Then, suddenly, a blur of movement made him catch his breath. A man had walked into the auditorium from the hallway, a quick flash of motion as he entered and began walking down the aisle toward the front. Mark breathed a sigh of relief that he hadn't been seen. The crowd grew quiet and still, the room dropping into an almost eerie silence. Mark could actually hear the man's footsteps as he reached the bottom of the room and climbed a set of stairs onto the stage.
"I'll take over from here, Stanley,"
a deep voice said, echoing off the ceiling, even though he'd said it softly. Acoustics.
"Thanks, Bruce,"
came the reply from Stanley, a man with a much higher voice.
Everyone give him your full attention.
There was the sound of someone descending the stairs, and then the rattle of him sitting in one of the chairs. When silence fell once again, the newcomer began to speak.
Let's get this started, people. It won't be long before we all lose our minds.
Chapter 37. As if the man's opening statement wasn't bizarre enough, the crowd clapped and cheered after he said it, making Mark shiver. Bruce waited for it to die down on its own before he spoke again. Mark was anxious to hear what the guy would say next.
Frank and Marla are back from a flyby of the areas around Asheville. Just as we thought, they've shored up those walls nice and tight. Humanity and charity, my friends, those days are long gone. The PFC has created an army of monsters, people who used to be willing to give the shirt off their backs for a neighbor in need. No longer. Those scumbags in Alaska and North Carolina, our very own Asheville, have turned their backs on the settlements once and for all. Worse, they've turned their backs on us. Us!
This elicited a chorus of angry shouts, stomping of feet, and banging on the armrests of the chairs. The noises echoed through the room until Bruce started talking again.
They sent us here, he shouted.
His voice was louder now.
They assigned us to take part in the worst civil rights fiasco since the War of 2020, a Holocaust. But they were firm that it was for the survival of the human race. They said it was to save what little resources we have, to be able to feed those people they deemed worthy to live. But who are they to decide who's worthy?
He paused for a moment before he continued.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it seems that we are not worthy. They sent us here to do their dirty work, and now they've decided to cut us off. Who are they? I ask all of you.
He practically screamed the last sentence, and once again sent the crowd into a fit of near hysterics. People screamed and stomped their feet. The roar made Mark's temples throb and the inside of his forehead ache. He thought it might never end, but it did, abruptly. He imagined that Bruce had made a gesture to silence them.
Here's where we stand, the man said, much calmer. The test subjects are getting more fanatical in their odd little religious cult by the day. We've made a deal with them. They wanted the little girl back. Seems that they want to sacrifice her to their newfound spirits. I think they've passed the point of no return. They're beyond any help we could give them. They can barely go a day without fighting each other, reorganizing factions, starting over until they battle again. But we made a deal with the few who still seem to be operating on some sane level. I'm sick and tired of worrying who's going to jump out of a tree and attack me every time I walk outside.
He paused, allowed a long, lingering moment of silence.
We gave them the little girl and the two women we found with her. I know it's harsh, but it buys us a little time where we don't have to worry about those people. I don't want to waste the precious ammo we have left defending ourselves against a cult.
Mark suddenly had a rushing sound in his ears. The little girl, the two women, gave them. The things Anton had said back in the bunk room. It all thudded in his mind, made him tremble. He thought back to how crazy those people at the bonfire were, and a situation he'd thought couldn't get worse did just that. They'd wasted all this time in the bunker, and their friends weren't even there anymore. Bruce was still talking, but Mark couldn't focus on the words. He leaned in to speak in Alec's ear.
How could they have given them to those people? We have to go. Who knows what those psychos will do to them?
Alec held a hand out to urge calm.
I know. We will. But remember the reason we came here. Let's hear what this man has to say, then we'll go. I promise. Lana means as much to me as Trina does to you.
Mark nodded, leaned back into the wall again, tried to listen to what Bruce was saying down on the stage.
Fire is out, thanks to the latest storm that rolled in a couple of hours ago. The sky's black, but the flames are dead. We're going to be dealing with mudslides all over the place.
The test subjects all fled to the half-burnt mountain homes, by the looks of it. Hopefully they'll stay put a while before they get desperate and march on Asheville for food. But I think we're safe to head over to the city in the next day or two. Force our way in, demand our rights. We'll go by foot and hope to surprise them. There were a few worried murmurs before he continued.
Look, we can't deny that we're dealing with our own outbreak now. We've all seen the symptoms, right here in our safe house. There's just no way our superiors would have agreed to unleash this virus without having something to reverse its effects. And I say that they'll give it to us, or they'll all die. Even if we have to go all the way to Alaska to do it. We know they have a flat trans at their headquarters. We'll go through it and make them give us what we deserve. More cheers and pounding feet thundered through the air.
Mark shook his head. These people were obviously unstable. There was a wild energy in the room, like they were a nest of vipers tensing to strike. Whatever the reason for spreading this virus, it was clear what it did to people. It made them crazy, and it appeared to be taking more time to do it as it spread. And if Asheville, the largest surviving city within hundreds of miles, really had erected walls to keep itself safe from the disease, things must be bad. Then the last thing anyone needed was a bunch of infected soldiers running through the streets. And the flat trans. Mark's head still pounded and throbbed, and it was hard to sort out his thoughts. He knew he had to focus on Trina, getting her back. But what about all this new information? He elbowed Alec, gave him a look that said his patience was running out.
Soon, boy, the man whispered. Never skip a chance to get intel. Then we'll go find our friends. I swear it.
Mark wasn't willing to sacrifice Trina for information. Not after what they'd been through to survive this long. He couldn't wait much longer. The room had grown quiet again.
The Post Flares Coalition.
Bruce pronounced every word with exaggerated diction and spite.
Who do these people think they are? Gods? They can just choose to wipe out the entire eastern half of the United States? Like the PFC has more right to live than anyone else?
There was another long pause after that. Mark couldn't take it anymore. He crawled around Alec and slowly peeked over the chair to take a look. Bruce was a large man with a bald head that shone in the dull light, his face pale and scruffy with a few days' worth of beard. The muscles of his arms and shoulders bulged against a tight black shirt as he stood with hands clasped in front of him, staring at the floor. If Mark hadn't heard all the things the man had just said, he'd think he could be praying.
Don't feel bad, friends. We couldn't have said no to what they asked us to do, Bruce said, slowly raising his eyes to gaze at his captive audience again. We had no choice. They used the very resources they're trying to preserve against us. We have to eat too, right? It's not our fault the virus wasn't quite what they expected. All we can do is what we've done since the sun flare struck the earth. Fight tooth and nail to live. Darwin taught about survival of the fittest in the natural world. Well, the PFC is trying to cheat nature. It's time to stand up for ourselves. We will live.
Another raucous round of cheers and whistles and clapping and foot pounding went on for a good minute or two. Mark slinked back to sit next to Alec, feeling stronger than ever that they had to get moving. He was just about to say something when the crowd fell silent, and Bruce's voice filled the room like the amplified hiss of a snake.
But first, my friends, I need you to do something for me. We have two spies in the back of this auditorium. They could very well be from the PFC. I want them bound and gagged by the time I count to 30.
Chapter 38. Mark was jumping to his feet almost before the man had finished his sentence, and Alec was close behind him. A vicious roar erupted from the crowd like a war cry as Mark paused to take them all in. The group was already on the move, springing from their chairs and stumbling over each other to be the first ones to get up the aisle to the two intruders. Mark ran toward the double doors of the exit, unable to take his eyes off the scene below, observing it with a strange mix of horror and curiosity. Bruce was bellowing orders and pointing his finger at Mark and Alec, his pale face now red with anger. There was something childish about his movements, almost cartoonish. The urgency with which his followers were clamoring to get into the open aisle also seemed exaggerated somehow, like they were all hopped up on some kind of drug. Men and women yelling and growling like apes on a rampage, each wanting to capture him, acting like their life depended on being the first to do it. Alec reached the doors first and practically flung himself out into the hallway. Mark skidded to a stop, his focus so intent on the onrushing crowd that he almost ran past the exit. That odd and misplaced sense of curiosity at their behavior winked out finally, replaced by the horrific thump of realization that he was about to be captured for the second time in so many days. Their cries of pursuit tore through the air and scared him, and with a quick sideways glance as he exited the room, he saw the first of their group charging up the main aisle of the auditorium with bloodlust in their eyes. He slipped on the floor of the hallway, caught his balance. Alec had reached out and closed the door after Mark came through, maybe buying them a couple of seconds. The light was dim, but Mark could tell Alec had forgotten which way they'd come from. "It's this way!" Mark yelled, already running. He heard Alec's footsteps behind him until there was the loud bang of the door slamming back open, followed by the rush of bodies and their continued battle cries. Mark ran hard, trying his best not to imagine their pursuers or what they'd do if they caught him. Bruce had said to bind and gag them, but the look Mark had seen on their faces told him that was only the beginning. He glanced back to make sure Alec was keeping up, saw the old bear pumping his arms and pounding his feet, then focused ahead again, sprinting along the slow curve of the hallway. He was heading for the stairs because he didn't know where else to go but up. Adrenaline shot through Mark, and hunger gnawed at his stomach. He couldn't remember the last time he'd eaten. He could only hope he had enough energy to escape back into the woods above them. The stairwell came into view up ahead, and he burst forward with a little more speed. The shouts from their pursuers echoed and tore through the narrow space of the hall, reminding Mark of that almost muffled screeching sound the approaching trains of the subtrans made as they sped along the tracks of their tunnels. Mark reached the stairs, was already leaping onto the second one by the time Alec made it. He heard the man's heavy breathing mixed with his own, the solid thumps of their feet pounding the steps. Mark grabbed the railing at each switchback, throwing himself forward and onto the next set. He and Alec charged up the three levels, reaching the top just as Mark heard their pursuers reach the bottom. The hollow echo of their frantic cries sent chills across his sweaty skin. He ran out into the upper hallway, which was still cloaked in darkness, something he could only hope would help them. A sudden moment of indecision hit him, causing a burst of panic. "Which way?" he yelled at Alec. A part of him thought they should hide somewhere, maybe in the room that held the generators. Searching for an exit meant they'd be out in the open and just waiting for capture if they didn't find one, but hiding would only delay being found. Instead of answering, Alec started running to the right, back in the direction of the huge, pivoting landing pad of the Berg. Mark followed him, relieved that his friend had taken charge again. They ran through the darkness at a reckless speed. Mark ran his hand against the wall to keep his bearings, but he knew that if he came across something on the floor, he was a goner. They passed the generator room, its struggling red bulb of faint light giving them a brief break from the pitch black, the hum of machinery like the drone of bees. Both the glow and the noise faded as they sprinted past. It was at that moment that Mark noticed something that almost made him stop. The sounds of the people chasing them had ceased. Completely. As if they'd never made it up the stairs. "Alec!" he whispered, barely hearing his own voice over their heaving breathing and footsteps. He repeated it a little louder. His friend came to a halt, and Mark passed him before he could stop too. Sucking in deep breaths, Mark turned back to face Alec, wishing desperately for a little light.
Why'd it stop? He wondered aloud.
I don't know,
Alec responded.
But we should keep moving.
Mark heard the man feeling his way along the walls of the corridor.
You do the right side. I'll stick to the left. Maybe there's another exit we don't know about.
Mark started searching. The walls were cool to the touch. He remembered the door with the faint rectangle of light from before, but there was no sign of it now. It was maddening to be in such darkness, and not knowing what had happened to the people chasing them put him on edge. It didn't sit right with him. They reached the end of the hallway, where the round submarine-like door led back into the chamber below the Berg landing pad. He heard Alec step through the opening, then come back out.
Can't see a thing in there, either.
There's nowhere else to go, Mark replied. Let's just get in there and shut that door until we figure something out. Maybe we can keep it...
Alec shushed him, cutting off his sentence.
Did you hear that?
He whispered. The question alone made Mark shiver. He grew completely still and held his breath. At first he heard nothing. Then there was a rustling sound, faint, but coming from down the hallway. It continued, and oddly, the noise played tricks, seeming to be close one second and far the next. Suddenly Mark was struck by the feeling that they weren't alone. Terror lit up his nerves. He moved to grab Alec, to push him through the doorway, knowing it was their only shot. Getting in there and slamming the thing closed, spinning the wheel handle, keeping it shut. But Mark had only taken one step forward when there was a click, followed by the blinding beam of a flashlight pointed directly at Mark and Alec. Whoever held it was only a few steps away.
We didn't say you could leave yet,
a woman said.